there's always room for new voices, just in the same way that there's always room for new Instagram creators. There's room for new TikTok creators. I think that you just have to have a unique voice and a unique point of view.
Welcome back to Waves, powered by Arcade Studios, a show for marketers, creators, and entrepreneurs who want to stop chasing the tide and make waves online. We're your hosts, Mike and Mitzi.
Today, we're joined by a favorite amongst ourselves and our team. It's Leah Haberman. Leah is a CMO, brand advisor, and adjunct instructor at UCLA Extension, teaching social media marketing and influencer marketing. She's been featured on NPR's Planet Money podcast, quoted in publications including The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, Business Insider, Fast Company, Marketing Brew, Ad Age, and more. We're subscribers of her weekly influencer marketing newsletter, in case you missed it, that Buffer ranked as one of the best marketing newsletters of 2023. And today, we're talking about what it takes to build an email newsletter that actually supports and grows your business. Leah, welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, our whole team has subscribed to your newsletter and I've been following it for a while now. So we are, I feel like it's the heartbeat of like how we find out about things, and you do such a good job at making it so digestible and so easy to like keep up with everything. So we really are excited to chat with you about it.
I love that. I love hearing from people when they say like, oh, somebody slacked me this at work, or my boss passed me your newsletter. And, you know, when I hear from like friends or colleagues, it's just like, yeah, that never gets old. I love that. I love that it's useful for people.
Yeah, not just that. We're big believers in email marketing in general, and we read a lot of newsletters and we go through a lot of content. We produce a lot of email content for our clients. So when one bubbles to the surface, like yours has for us, I mean, it just has been a huge part of our forming our POV around email marketing and staying on top of trends and news and stuff like that. So we've been looking forward to this
one. Awesome. Let's get into it.
Let's do it. For our listeners, I think many of them will be familiar with you already, but for any that aren't, tell us a bit about yourself. Get us started. Tell us about your work in influencer marketing. And we'd love to hear about UCLA as well. We actually do some work with them. So that's a cool connection.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know about that. All right. You'll have to tell me about that. So I've always worked in media, used to work in entertainment, which is kind of the OG influencers. And then in 2014, 2015, I was doing some work with Dick Clark Productions, which puts on the Golden Globes, American Music Awards, Billboard Music Awards. And they were probably the first, I mean, not the first company to be using influencers, but it was the first place where it was kind of, we distinguished between who are more traditional celebrities and who are kind of creators and influencers. So at the time, you know, the people, like I walked Casey Neistat down the red carpet and he was vlogging. And this was before, I mean, he was already pretty big, but I think it was kind of like pre, like really him exploding. Ami Song was there. And so they were one of the first places that I worked that kind of was really tapping into these digital creators. And then a couple of other jobs that I had where I was hiring creators. We were doing influencer marketing 2016, 2017, 2018. And then 2018 was when UCLA reached out, and it was like pretty impressive that they were looking ahead and kind of had this vision at that point saying, okay, we want to offer a course, part of our extension program. So it's for people that already have their, undergrad degree, but are looking at like a digital marketing certificate, business management. And we want to offer this class that is personal branding and becoming an influencer. So that was the first class that I taught for them and have taught since 2018. Since then, I've taught other courses as well and like custom programs that they have, and social media marketing, but definitely kind of being a creator and how you become a creator and how close it's how closely it's tied to being an entrepreneur is just something that I love. And is my favorite class that I teach, kind of a repeat class that I teach for them. And then since then I've worked for creators. I worked for a creator who launched her own company, running marketing for her company. And now I'm writing the newsletter, I'm consulting for brands, and I'm teaching at UCLA or UCLA Extension.
That's so cool. I feel like we could follow so many rabbit trails around like creators being entrepreneurs, because so many of them really don't consider themselves an entrepreneur, and maybe they're starting to now. But we're one of our clients. We kind of like support creators with that as well. But I want to talk about your newsletter. Tell us about, in case you missed it, how did it get started? Was there a need that you felt like you needed to fill? And then how has it grown so far?
Yeah, so it was actually a student that gave me the idea. She's since become a friend and we're still in touch. But at the time, I think it was 2019 or 2020. And she kind of rightly said at the end of the class, because in every class, we would talk about stuff that was in the news, new apps, new platform updates, new features. And so I would talk about this with my students every week. And at the end of the, you know, when she finished my course, she said, like, how am I going to keep up to date with all of this stuff? Like, there's not really anywhere that I can like get a weekly digest of all of this information. And she suggested I start a newsletter. And at the time I was busy and I was like, oh yeah, this is never going to happen. But then, you know, I started thinking about it. I post a lot on Twitter and I realized like a newsletter is really almost kind of just like taking what's on Twitter and putting it into, a newsletter format. And so I started soon after that. And it was really just at that point, it was for students to try and keep students updated on what was happening and a couple of different clients that I had. And then eventually, you know, more people started subscribing and it started growing. Certainly anytime that you Buffer picked it, and that was kind of a goal of mine this year. Each year I have different goals, whether it's like a creator that I'm hoping will follow, subscribe to my newsletter. This year's goal, I really wanted to get kind of ranked by another, like a media outlet to be like on their best of list. So that was sort of a goal of mine. So I was really happy, and it certainly helps grow. You can see where your newsletter subscribers are coming from. And I think a lot of them are coming through discovery on Substack, and Substack is the platform that I publish my newsletter on. So a lot of people discover it that way. People discover it through getting ranked on Buffer's, you know, top marketing newsletter lists of 2023. There's another one, Rachel Carton. She does Link in Bio. I don't know if you read that. It's an excellent newsletter. She recommended me, so I get a lot of subscribers out of that. And then recently, I managed to have a couple of different exclusives or sort of first look at, one was a TikTok program, and then another one was Instagram's new text-based app. And so, you know, once you people start sharing stuff with you and you put it in the newsletter, you get kind of added exposure for that. And I did a bunch of press interviews, especially around the Instagram's new app. And so I think that also helped grow awareness of the newsletter.
First off, can I just say that I love that as a professor, there is a demand from your students to stay connected with you in order to be up to date on what's happening now. Like, that is so cool to me. When I studied marketing in university, that was not my experience with my professors. You know, it was a great school, but I feel like there was a need for all of us once we graduated, once we finished school, for us to go and then modernize what we had learned and kind of like catch up to what was happening digitally and stuff like that. So props to you for that. And we'll really want to talk a lot about the newsletter, but I also want to just touch on specifically what you just mentioned about Instagram's new app that they're going to be releasing that's similar to Twitter. As a Twitter user myself, someone who prefers text-based social media, I think it could be really interesting. I'm excited about it. I don't think I'll leave Twitter, but I have more followers on Instagram, and I feel like there's maybe a little bit more access to audiences. But what's your point of view on this?
Okay, now I have to, I don't know that I follow you on Twitter, but I gotta go and follow you after this, Mike, because I love Twitter as well. And I was talking to somebody else about that, about whether or not people are gonna leave Twitter. And the way that I described it was like, Twitter's a little bit like when you shit talk your family, if I'm allowed to say that, or you can bleep that word. But you know, when you complain about your family and you're like, I hate my family and they're driving me crazy. But then somebody else complains about your family and you're like, whoa, no, hold up. Like, you're not allowed to say that. And I feel like that's what Twitter is for the diehard users. You're like, we complain about it. We love to hate it, but we're not actually going to leave it. And we don't want anybody else to criticize it. Like, just us, that's our thing. So that is a really good question over, you know, who is going to be using this app? Clearly, it's built off the back of Instagram, and you're able to bring over your followers, your bio, if you verified status. So I think it's going to be really attractive to people that are already on Instagram or part of the Meta family, Facebook, you know, WhatsApp, Instagram. I think it's going to be attractive for people that never got into Twitter or maybe left Twitter a long time ago, especially, you know, in the past year, it's kind of gotten very chaotic. But will current Twitter users leave that platform and start using this one instead? I think we're going to have to wait and see on that. You know, it's always hard to tell. You hear there's a new platform. What's going to happen? Like the way that the culture and community on a platform grows is kind of organic, and you can pump a bunch of money into it and, you know, bring on celebrities and influencers and creators. But like the way that a regular user goes in and uses that app, it's always really impossible to predict until it launches and kind of takes on a life of its own. So I think at this point, it's kind of really a wait and see. Like they're going to do their best to make sure that they've got all of these celebrities and creators. And that's how I found out about it. A creator who had been talked to by Meta, they're going out right now and pitching athletes, musicians, artists, TV, movie stars, big creators, and trying to get them on this app. So they're going to give it every shot for people to see, oh, there's something cool going on over there. I want to go check it out. But, you know, whether or not people decide to stick around, we'll have to wait and see with that.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Well, I'm excited about it. I'm also curious because it sounds like it's going to be a separate app. And that kind of reminds me of when they launched IGTV as a separate app. But then later they ended up folding it back into Instagram, into their native app. So I'm curious what that life cycle will look like for something like this, if it'll follow the same progression or if it'll always just remain kind of like this third party decentralized thing. Not sure if you have any thoughts on that.
Do you remember Threads? That was another, they brought out kind of a companion app called Threads. I was actually just looking in my, you know, in my folders on my phone today. And it's like the graveyard of apps that have been discontinued, not just by Meta, but like there's a ton of apps that kind of we all used to be on and are either not on now or just don't work anymore. But like Threads was another one. And it was kind of like a DM conversation app, companion app that Instagram launched like 2 years ago, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, and then just kind of retired, or like you said, like they folded it back into the, you know, the Instagram experience. And now we know how much emphasis they're putting on DMs and stories within the app itself versus having a standalone experience. So yeah, to your point, it's really hard to predict. Like they could launch this and then 6 months from now, a year from now, they could just roll it in. I do think, and I'd be curious to hear your thoughts about this, you know, what you think about the everything app. So there's this race with all the big social networks and platforms to become the everything app, which is like creativity, connection, communication, but also utility. You're paying bills, you're buying stuff. You know, we know like Amazon Shop, TikTok Shop, like they're all trying to sell things and become much more utilitarian. So is this kind of Instagram rolls this out, we all get used to posting text-based updates, and then they roll it back into Instagram as Mark Zuckerberg and Adam Mosseri try to grow this everything app where you could do everything in one place.
Yeah. Mitzi, I feel like you're going to say something. You go.
I was just going to say, yeah, like they're so conquestial. Like I think every single app is just like racing to kind of have everyone's eyeballs, like you said. But I just don't know if the public and how they use apps like is as open to that. Like even with Shop, like didn't they fold that out, or aren't they starting to pull back on that too? Which at first was, it made so much sense. And that was the one that I was like, okay, this could be a game changer for me because I use Instagram to shop and make decisions all the time, but I didn't really use it once it was rolled out to actually purchase things. So I just find that like, I can see, you know, the benefits of doing that. I just don't know if it's always like the public wants that. Like I think our phone is the everything thing, you know, like our phone has mm-hmm. all the things and all the payments and all the apps or whatever. And I just don't know if I look at apps and social platforms, especially as different like characters in a play. So like TikTok is such a different character. And even if they introduce other features, it'll stay that like young, snarky, like character in my digital ecosystem. And Instagram is a different kind of character, and YouTube's different too. So, and then like all the other shopping apps that exist as well. Because I even know Shopify has Shop, and they're trying to create like feeds in the Shopify Shop apps that you can follow people and they can recommend products and things like that. And then Like to Know It is doing the same thing as well. So I don't know. I unless they like bought each other and folded them into like a larger like thing, then maybe that could work. But I just, to me, it's like so separated.
I kind of agree with you, like on the characters. I call it their DNA, but like whatever your original DNA was when you launched is the way you kind of get stuck in people's minds. Like that's the perception the public has mm-hmm. of you. The one thing that I would say to counter that though is, and I've seen this over the years, when Instagram bred out stories based on Snapchat, because we know Meta likes to borrow right. from other companies. So they bred out stories. And at mm-hmm. the time, I was a huge Snapchat fan, like back in, I think this was like 2015. I was like, oh, you know, Instagram users are never going to go for it. And this can never replace the Snapchat stories experience. It's very clearly this belongs to Snapchat. And like, I'm not wrong a lot about a lot of stuff, but I was like hugely wrong about that prediction. And then I think, you know, again, like look at Reels, like they borrowed from TikTok. They took the short form video idea and introduced Reels. And now we're all pretty used to Reels, and Reels are kind of like integrated as part of our everyday usage of Instagram. So there, I agree with you, like on like, yeah, a lot of times kind of, you know, companies kind of like baked in DNA and that's how we regard them. But I think every once in a while, and especially Instagram, has managed to borrow features from other platforms that like over time we've become adjusted to. And like, I'm sure most people you talk to now, especially if you talk to like Gen Z, I'm sure they had no idea that Instagram took stories from Snapchat. Like that's, it's just kind totally. Of in the mists of time. And now we're used to stories is one of the best features on Instagram. So this could happen, but yeah, it's so hard to predict.
Yeah, I feel like stories is probably the best or most successful use or like, I guess, case study for how they did this well, because even though we are used to Reels, I don't know if I think their hope in terms of like getting people to stop using TikTok and go and stay on Instagram to use the short form video, the same way they were able to successfully do that with stories and as a reaction to Snapchat, I don't think it's fully worked out the same way yet. Like it could, but I think TikTok is still like its own, you know, beast, and people aren't necessarily leaving TikTok to go to store or to Reels, but I can see how it's kind of like diversifying the platform of Instagram, and people are maybe creating more content for Reels that kind of go for both. But I totally forgot. I was also one of those Snapchat people who are like, I love this app, and like nothing can replace it, and like the filters, and I would like post everything all day long on there. But now I think I've even deleted the app from my phone because I don't use it at all anymore because I have stories.
Oh, they still have great filters.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. There's still tons of people using Snapchat too, but true. I feel like it's a really distinct group of people. The only thing I'll add too is I feel like Reels kind of like, there's some cloudiness in the overlap between Reels and IGTV, but they kind of rose from the ashes of IGTV as it kind of died its death. But, and I think it was good. Like Reels was what people actually wanted compared to what IGTV was. And I think the difference that will be interesting to monitor is that this is obviously text-based versus more of like a visual experience, like a photo or a video, which to me, in my experience, being a Twitter user, feels like a very separate audience, kind of like how we commented on Snapchat. So yeah, I'm excited to try it and I want to like it. But I think it could be interesting, similarly to how people use both TikTok and Reels, that people could end up just using both Twitter and this new app. And then, Leah, one thing, I think you mentioned it in an article that I was reading about this where you were quoted, but you talked about how maybe screenshots of this could replace screenshots from Twitter on like Instagram stories or people's feeds, which I thought was interesting. I feel like people might not really even think about that at this stage, but there are a ton of people that are platforming their Twitter content on Instagram, and that whole visual transition could be really interesting and adding more like kind of seamlessness between what you're doing in text versus what you're doing visually. So curious about that too.
I mean, there's so many Instagram users that have launched Twitter accounts just for the Twitter screenshots. And you can always tell when you see an Instagram person on Twitter because they're not engaging in any other way or posting anything else, but they're just doing these like really great threads or standalone thoughts. And you just know that it's for the screenshots to show up on Instagram. So, you know, if Instagram can be that platform for people to share thoughts, if you love writing captions or you're, you know, really great at words and really witty, I think that that could be a really good option for those people.
Mm-hmm. So true. I could talk about this for a long time, but let's get back to the newsletter. I like you mentioned that it was a demand thing from students. And for the first little while, it was pretty much all students that were subscribing to it. But talk to us about that transition from it being for students to being more for the broader public. And even practically, I'm really interested in that because we're thinking about standing up our own newsletter through our agency. How long did it take you to get to weekly? And like, what were the steps in the process for it to become just a real engine of its own?
So it was weekly right from the beginning. I just decided there's somebody else who puts out a great newsletter. Matt Navarra is a guy out of the UK and he does a marketing mm-hmm. newsletter, comes out every Friday morning. I think that inspired me. I just thought, oh, that must be when marketing newsletters come out is Friday morning. So I'll just put mine out on Friday morning. There wasn't really, again, because I was starting it for students, there wasn't like a lot of intention or strategy that went into it. And at the beginning, it was really, you know, I'll say it about myself, like it was kind of sloppy. There was no formatting. The photos are horrible. If you ever go back and look at the first few that came out, it's just, it looks like I took texts to friends or DMs or whatever, and I just kind of put them in a newsletter format. But I'm happy that I had, you know, not a lot of audience or eyeballs on my content at that time because it allowed me to kind of explore and figure out what I wanted to do. And in the same way that we tell creators all the time, like just create content, just create, like start creating because you're not going to be able to know how to perfect it and refine it or what audiences are looking for until you start putting content out there. So in that way, I think I kind of unintentionally just took my own advice, started putting it out weekly. It was really messy, really sloppy. There was no logo. I think I probably created my first two logos I created in Canva myself and were kind of not very professional. I'm not a designer by any means. And that went on for, I think the newsletter's been around for about 2.5 years now. So probably the very first year, you know, not really well formatted. The information was interesting, but it wasn't like, it was kind of sloppy, a little messy, all kind of jumbled together. I would say after about a year was when I started paying a little bit more attention. And then probably in December, I started getting more serious about it and paid for somebody to design a logo for me, which I'm, you know, really happy with kind of this latest version. Really paid attention to formatting, started looking at other newsletters and kind of how they set up the flow of their newsletter. So I would say year one was just kind of an experiment and a mess. Year two was kind of refining. Year three, I'm pretty happy. I did have a conversation with Substack recently and they pointed out all the things that I'm doing wrong and could improve upon in a helpful kind of constructive way. But I was like, oh God, yeah, you're right. Like I thought I had got it so far. And they were like, you know, you could be doing so much better if you changed this, rewrote this, updated this. And so it was all like helpful information or advice for me. So I think, you know, my advice to anybody, whether it's a newsletter or anything, it's the same thing that we tell content creators, like just get started because it's going to take you a really long time to get to whatever perfect is or your vision or version of perfect is. But if you don't start, you're never going to get there. So I think that was kind of my mindset.
Yeah, that's great advice. I'm curious, I know you've mentioned you've gotten access to like things like early, like looks at different features for Meta and Instagram, but are there any other unexpected benefits that you've seen from, you know, when you've evolved it from a newsletter for students and now it's kind of like a industry focused newsletter for creators and marketers and so many other people who are working in this space? Like what are some of the benefits that you've seen from that journey?
Professionally, it's a really good lead magnet for me. So I've had companies reach out and want to work with me and have me come in and consult because somebody on their team reads the newsletter. So that's been really helpful kind of from a professional perspective. From a personal perspective, you know, when I hear that I met somebody at an industry conference who was a BuzzFeed writer, and they recognized me and they read my newsletter. And I'm like, wow, like you're a real legitimate, you know, writer and journalist working at BuzzFeed and you recognize me. I get texts. I had a guest speaker recently in one of my classes who is a TikTok employee. And apparently my newsletter made the rounds inside TikTok. And she reached out and then ended up coming in and being a guest speaker for my class. So I think it's a really good, you know, there's like the personal satisfaction of people recognizing the hard work that you're putting into something and appreciating it. And then professionally having people recognize, and whether that's, you know, consulting opportunities or people wanting to collaborate or in some way, you know, participate in what you're doing. That's been super helpful.
I wanted to ask, because I feel like, back to the Twitter conversation, there's a lot of creators specifically on Twitter, let alone other platforms, that have their own newsletter. And it seems to be an effective tool for them. But I guess a two-part question. One, do you feel that newsletters are a good option or opportunity for creators right now? Or would you say that it's pretty saturated and there should be a different take for creators that are just thinking about getting started right now?
Okay, that's a good question. So should a creator start a newsletter? Yes. I was talking to Dilma recently, who I know you guys know, TikTok's queen of business school.
Yeah.
And she had just started a newsletter. I love Dilma. I love her content. She had just started a newsletter and she was struggling a little bit with how much work it was and also kind of the mind shift between creating video to more text content. So I do recommend the newsletter. I think it's a really good way to be seen by people that maybe aren't necessarily on Twitter. And I always think about that. I'll talk about something on Twitter or I'll talk about something on Instagram. And then I realize, you know, maybe 100 people have seen that. The people that read the newsletter are not necessarily the people that have seen that. And so I think, especially in marketing, it's like we always have to remind ourselves, like, people have to see things at multiple touch points and multiple times. And just because you talked about something on Twitter does not mean your entire Twitter audience or your overall digital audience has seen what you're talking about. So I think a newsletter is a really great way of recapping that. It is a lot of work. So it's hard. But, you know, I don't encourage people to just take it on lightly. Like, yeah, sure, just launch a newsletter. It's a lot of work. And then your last question was about kind of the saturated space. There's always room for new voices, just in the same way that there's always room for new Instagram creators. There's room for new TikTok creators. I think that you just have to have a unique voice and a unique point of view. So I think if all you're doing is recapping headlines, for example, that's not necessarily going to work because there's already people doing a really good job at that. But if you're recapping headlines and bringing a really good perspective or analysis, that's great. Or if you're digging deeper into a story and talking to people and doing interviews, that's great. So I think there is a way to do it. It's just in the same way you become a creator on any platform or in any medium, you have to figure out what is your, you know, the unique value that you're providing to the people who would subscribe.
That's fantastic advice. And you mentioned that you're almost 3 years in now and you've done it largely yourself. Like, this has mostly been you working with a designer and some friends along the way. But you also mentioned Dilma, who's working on hers, and she's struggling with this transition from video creation to text creation. What would be your recommendation be for that kind of cycle early on, as maybe someone who's more naturally tending to video? Should they be getting help in writing the copy, or should they be trying to figure out how to do it on their own for a while? What's your take?
Yeah. And just to clarify, because Dilma is great, and she's also a great writer. When I have seen her write stuff, she's a great writer as well. I think it's like kind of the, almost like the, you know, the switching in mediums. The way that she tackled that was to hire somebody to help her write it. And so she adds some kind of insight and analysis at the beginning and the end. And then she has somebody help kind of, I would say, recap or decode her podcast that she's doing and put it into a more newsletter-friendly format. So that's one way of doing it. You could hire somebody. And if you have the budget to be able to do that, I think it's a great way to, you know, bring on help and have somebody help you write it. Another way, and I've seen a couple of creators do this pretty successfully, is come out with a very short format. And so one paragraph, like you're providing information around one thing. There's a founder of an app called the Stylebot app, and she comes out with like a tip. It's for word nerds. And so it's like she comes out with a tip around like some sort of like grammar or language or something like that. But it's one tip, one paragraph in a newsletter. There's somebody else, his name escapes me, but that's on Twitter. And he's continually talking about that, where he has like this huge newsletter audience, but he provides, you know, one paragraph of advice on something for entrepreneurs. And so there's ways that you could do it, whether it's bringing on help or whether it's really offering something valuable, but like micro, you know, like a micro short update. I think that there are ways to do it. But yes, it's going to take it's going to take some effort to kind of get it going, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you have an opinion on how brands can use email more creatively. I think there's so many great, you know, writers and some of the thought leaders that you mentioned, which are led by like a personal, you know, POV. And I think there's room for brands to be part of that. But I'm wondering if you have any opinions on like how brands can approach email more creatively and more impactfully.
Yeah. And I think it's important to distinguish between email marketing and newsletters.
Right.
To me, email marketing is really about you're sending out a message, you're trying to sell a product or service, and it's much more of a hard sell. It's kind of performance marketing. You want people to click through, you want people to go to your site to sign up for something, download something, buy something. A newsletter, to me, some people use their newsletter with links and try and get you to go to their website or wherever they're trying to send you. The best newsletters to me have the information within the newsletter. It's the same way that we tell creators on other platforms, like deliver value to the audience that's on your platform versus saying, hey, I just posted a great video on YouTube. Go over there to watch it. Really give the value in the newsletter. So I think for brands can do that. I think it's just such a kind of an old school mentality of like, we need to drive people somewhere. And anytime we have anybody's attention, we need to be funneling that attention to this specific location. Try to create a better experience within the email or the newsletter itself. And I think that's probably the thing that brands get wrong most of the time. If I can give a shout out to Marine Layer, don't work for them. Don't consult for them. Marine Layer is this California clothing company. I open every email that they send. And it's not a newsletter, but it's so clever and funny. And there's always something in the email, whether it's the subject line, whether it's photos of their staffers, that makes me want to click in. It's such a personal experience. And it is so entertaining that I will click in and look at their email. And sometimes I'll click through and buy something, but sometimes I'll just appreciate the email for what it is. So if anybody's looking for a good example, Marine Layer is doing a great job of their email marketing.
That's so awesome, because I would not hear the brand name Marine Layer and expect a great email experience. Yeah. You know, no shade to them, and I've never heard of them, but it's just like that unpredictableness is so interesting and engaging.
Yeah, I hope they hear this, because I don't know anybody on the team, but I want them to hear it and be like, oh yeah, she's our number one email fan. So
love it.
So good. So I'm curious, you've talked about like brands and we've talked about creators, obviously, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on what creators or brands are getting wrong when it comes to email and newsletters, maybe more specifically.
You know, I think that idea of driving people to somewhere, to another destination. And so anytime I click into a newsletter and there's a great headline and there's a promise of something I'm about to learn or see, and I click in and there's like a brief intro and then it points to YouTube or it points to Instagram or it points to their website. That's kind of a pet peeve of mine. And I think it also just turns people off in general of like, you're not actually getting, it's clickbait. You're not getting the payoff of whatever was promised in the subject line. So if I had to say one thing that just kind of drives me crazy, that it brands and creators do that. So I think it's definitely that, like having to click through to something else.
Could I get you to expand on this a little bit? Because I feel like you've made two really important recommendations, but maybe for someone that's like newer or thinking about getting their newsletter or email marketing program off the ground, it could feel a little bit conflicting or like hard to figure out where the sweet spot is between these things. But one you recommended, if switching from something like video content to writing and like text-based content in the form of a newsletter is difficult. A great way to approach it is being really brief, maybe one paragraph, something like that. But then you've also mentioned even specifically with brands, but also creators, how leading away from the email, just having a little snippet and then a link isn't necessarily the best practice either. So can you maybe share examples or expand a little bit more on those points to help us understand how we be brief, but then also include value in the email without getting too long?
Yes. And I'm glad that you pointed that out, because it kind of, it does sound inconsistent. But when I say you're offering one paragraph in a newsletter, that paragraph holds value. You're telling a story, you're giving advice, you're letting somebody know how to do something, you're informing them, you're inspiring them. It's its own story with beginning, middle, and end within a paragraph. It's hard to do, you know, put all of that in a paragraph. Like you really, it's not to say that it's easy and you can just dash off like, kind of a nonsense line that people are going to want to read. No, you've got to put some thought into it and really craft a good paragraph that does offer value, as opposed to when creators or brands put a paragraph that's essentially just, you know, a funnel to their website or something else. And the paragraph doesn't really have any information. It's just, hey, would you like to find out how to do this, how to look like this, how to, you know, whatever it is. And it points away. The paragraph should really be a standalone, and somebody could consume that paragraph, whether it's on Twitter, on Instagram, in a newsletter, on your blog, and really get something out of it, get some, you know, whether it's advice and they learn something, they're entertained, you know, they're touched and they feel some sort of emotion. Like that paragraph needs to be a standalone piece of content, as opposed to just, you know, a funnel to something else.
Mm-hmm. That's a great clarification. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. You work a lot with creators, and I'm wondering if you could share a prediction for the creator economy at large, because there's a lot going on. A lot of people are talking about the creator economy, how much it's valued at, how fast it's growing. And we know a lot about what's happening right now, but as someone who's really like intimately involved in this space, and even your newsletter specifically is about what's coming next and like keeping up in real time, I'd love to know where you think this thing has taken us.
Yes. So yeah, like that's kind of what I think about all the time, is how is this going to impact the newsletters for anybody? You know, if you're in social media, you're using these platforms, but really creators are kind of at the heart of it. Like, how are these things going to impact creators, and how do they need to be adapting or anticipating what's going to happen? So one of the things that we are seeing is every company has a creator program now, whether they need it or not. Every company is launching a creator program. Some of them, it makes sense. You know, Amazon, yes, the affiliate program, the platforms kind of make sense to have creator programs, but we're seeing like all kinds of companies launching these creator programs. It's interesting. I think if you're a creator and you're approached by a company that's launching a creator program, you know, I think it's good news in the short term, in that everybody wants you right now. Creators are in great demand. Like you said, creator economy is booming. There's a lot of headlines. So I think you want to capitalize on that and take advantage. But I think it's also important to think long term and kind of look at it strategically and sustainably. And so if a company is approaching you with a deal, you want to think about, okay, like, does this seem like a program that has legs and is going to stick around for a while? One of the biggest problems that we see with creators is the number one ways that they get paid is through brand deals. Like that is 75% of creator income is based on brand deals. That has a 3 to 4, as a creator, you have a 3 to 4 year shelf life before there's another creator coming along, something new, they want to work with somebody new, or maybe it's a new platform. You're on Instagram, now brands want to work with TikTok creators. I would say when people approach you, whether it's a brand deal or whether it's a company that's just launched a creator program and they want to hire you, look for things that hold long-term opportunity, not just in sponsorships, but do they want to use you as a consultant and talk to you about, audience segmentation or, you know, product R&D, like based on what they're doing, because they want your insights since you are an expert in fashion, beauty, home, food, tech, you know, whatever it is that kind of your niche is, look for the opportunities that have long-term potential. Do they want to bring you in as a guest speaker at one of their events? Adobe's really good at that, at like bringing creators on and having them talk at different conferences and stuff like that. Because I think it's really hard being a creator, and creator has such a short shelf life to being like an it person, creator, kind of like the hot, buzzy person of the moment. So the more you can look for opportunities that are going to give you, you know, like grow, help you grow professionally, help you grow as a creator, help you grow as an entrepreneur and thinking about your business like 5-10 years out. I think that that's something we don't talk enough about. You know, 10 years from now, what are you doing? And for a lot of creators, especially the ones that get up past the million followers, you know, they start to branch out. They have their own products, they launch their own businesses, and that's how they're able to sustain themselves. So I think just think about it kind of as a, you know, like your career is long, or hopefully your career is long. And so think about like 5-10 years down the road, are you happy you took this partnership and did it really contribute to your overall success?
Yeah, that's great advice. I feel like every creator needs like a business coach or something that can help them do like more long-term planning to kind of set some stuff up in motion. But that's awesome. We're getting to near the end of our interview here, and I'm really excited to ask you this specific question. Who is making waves right now and why? And this can be a creator, it could be a brand, it could be a platform, but anything that you feel like is making waves right now and why it's grabbing your attention.
I kind of have to go back to the Instagram text app. I wish something else had come along that I could talk about. And probably at the time that this podcast launches, I think at that point, the app could have just launched or might be just launching. I think like a new app is just fascinating. And a new app from Meta, you know, they have what, like 3 billion people worldwide using them. So they've got a pretty good user base. People aren't really looking for new apps right now. We've become much more conservative in how many new apps we download and use. I think on average, the numbers like we use 9 apps per day, which includes email, banking apps, other things. So we're not necessarily looking for a new social app, but if anybody's got a chance to launch a new app and have it be a success, I think it's probably Meta. So that's probably what I'm most fascinated by right now.
Cool. Exciting stuff. We can't wait to see it roll out.
Me too.
And our last question here, obviously we'll link the newsletter in all the descriptions for this show, but where can listeners connect with you?
Yeah, so definitely in case you missed it, which is my newsletter, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, Instagram stories. I don't really post work stuff or advice or news on Instagram feed, but definitely in stories. And I'm just a lurker on TikTok, so don't follow me on TikTok. I'm watching your videos. I'm not posting anything for you to watch on TikTok.
Sounds good. Well, Leah, this has been such valuable content and dialogue. We're really excited that you chose to join us for this season of the podcast, and we'll continue subscribing to the newsletter. I'm sure many who listened will as well.
I appreciate that.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Waves. If you enjoyed this episode, you can hit subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow along on social at Hello Arcade. We'll see you next time.